can you describe for us the spectacle that one would see on a typical afternoon in winter in downtown Auburn? This is before the hazing started. What would we see?
In the winter, the crows start to come into Auburn, New York, sometime in the late afternoon as it gets to be dusk-ish. You start to see lines of crows coming from three or four different directions, and they keep coming. They just keep coming. There are thousands and thousands of birds that actually come and start to congregate in some of the trees in around town, like in Fort Hill Cemetery. The place will be just covered with crows. It looks almost like they're leaves on the trees, but they're big and black, and they make noise. And eventually, as it starts to get darker, these thousands of crows will move from these outlying areas and fly right down into downtown Auburn and take up their nighttime positions in some of the trees around town. And it's quite an impressive sight. When you start to see thousands of birds together in one spot, it's impressive. No matter what they are or who you are, it's really an incredible spectacle.
All right. And the obvious question is, what are they doing there? Why are they doing this?
We don't really know why crows come together in the winter the way they do. All we know is that they've been doing it forever, for as long as there have been crows. We have some guesses as to why they might be doing it, but I have to admit that there's not a lot of good data that's very convincing for any particular reason. One is they do it for anti-predator purposes. That is, nobody but a person can end up killing all the crows that come together in a big spot. A great horned owl could only take one or two, and there are thousands of others that would be there. Also, you'd have to be a pretty brave predator to go into a group of 60,000 crows, because the crows are fairly vocal about predators they don't like. And so there's some protection from predators in it that way. There's also the potential that the birds are finding out information about food. That is, they're sharing in some respects, sharing information about where were the good fields that had food today. So if you're a hungry crow coming into one of these big flocks, you didn't find any food, and you look around and you see somebody in the morning headed out in a purposeful way, looks fat and happy, and you say, hey, he knows where the food is, and so you follow him. And so by that way, they can actually share information about where the good food sources are. And then there's also a social thing that goes on. They clearly are coming together and interacting in big ways in these things. There are lots of chases, lots of fights, lots of arguments, lots of flights around and things like that. And that's a little harder for us to understand. We don't really know exactly what they're doing there. But there's a potential for the birds to be, I don't know, finding mates or doing some other bits of social things, getting some social information that we don't quite understand yet.
How big a deal is this particular roost in Auburn, as crow roosts go? As a wildlife spectacle, too, how would this rate? It sounds like a pretty big deal. And how does it rate also as a scientific mystery?
As crow roosts go, the Auburn roost is a moderately big roost. It had been about 60,000 birds. But there can be bigger ones. There are lots of roosts that are in that size range around the continent. There are some that can be in the hundreds of thousands. The largest known roosts are a couple of roosts in the Midwest that have been counted up to 2 million birds. And that's a big roost. That's a big roost.
How about in terms of roosts that are located near an urban center, which is kind of the problem with this roost from the human point of view? Are they typically right near City Hall, or is Auburn unusual in that the birds seem to be so close to where the people want to be?
You know, Auburn's not that unusual in being an urban roost. We're finding more and more these roosts are moving into urban centers. And for Auburn, we have a lot of good information because somebody at Cornell University was actually looking at this a long time ago. And we know that there were about 20,000 crows roosting just outside of Auburn in 1935 and that they'd been there at least since 1913 or something like that. So we know that the crows have actually been coming together in a fairly large aggregation around Auburn for at least 100 years. And it just so happened that about 15 years ago or slightly less, they moved into town. Instead of being outside of town, they moved into town. And that's what made the big difference in people's attitudes about it.
This might seem obvious, but what part of this don't people like?
Well, people don't like a couple of things. One is the mess. If you've ever had a bird that you've, a pet bird in your house, you know you just can't potty train them worth a darn. And so they just defecate wherever they want to. And when you have 60,000 birds there, that's a fair amount of bird poop that you're dealing with. So certainly they make a mess underneath the roosts. And if those roosts happen to be over a parking lot, well, then the cars get messed up and the sidewalks get messed up and people get annoyed. Also, they're pretty noisy. And so if you're annoyed by loud noises, that gets to bother a lot of people. And there's just something about a whole bunch of big black birds that people don't seem to like. We seem to have some problems with crows. And having that many of them together in one spot just bothers a lot of people. Unfortunately, a lot of people make the analogy to Alfred Hitchcock's The Birds, and it seems like some kind of unnatural and spooky and scary, creepy thing. And in fact, it's the most natural thing in the world. The crows have been doing this forever. It's just that we haven't seen it very well before, and so it gets hooked up with this unfortunate movie reference that gets people all upset.
Yeah, you were... When you're talking about people don't like big black crows, that seems quite clear from terms like, you know, a murder of crows and unkindness of ravens, like we were talking about before. It seems like people think that corvids are just sinister. But what are these birds really like?
Well, the birds are just birds. They're not sinister and they're not evil. They're simply birds out there trying to make a living. In fact, American crows are some of the most family-oriented birds in the world. They actually have a social system that's extremely like ours, and it's centered on the nuclear family with the parents and offspring from a number of different years that actually stay with the parents and help them raise young. And the family stays together and works together and protects each other and helps each other find food. So they're actually a very, I don't know, laudable social system, and not in a bunch of evil gang of nasty villains at all. Part of the reason that we think that we have this prejudice against them, I think comes partly from our Northern European heritage, where there aren't any vultures in Northern Europe. So the ravens and the crows were the birds that were out there cleaning up the carcasses. And when people die, or there was disease, there was a plague, there was a battle, something like that, when there would be dead people lying around, it was the crows and ravens that were coming in and plucking out the eyeballs and waiting for them to hurt each other so that they could feed on it. And so I think a lot of the mythology for the crows and ravens that influence us is from this Northern European heritage. A lot of other places in the world see the crows and ravens as positive creatures, as not as spooky or evil, but rather as important members of their mythology. I know in the northwestern North American continent, the Native Americans there, the raven plays a big role in the creation myth, that they're the ones that help the humans come onto the earth, sort of thing. So rather than being nasty and evil, they're actually helpful.
Yeah, I remember reading some of that too about some of the Scandinavian countries, that a raven accompanied the god Odin.
Odin had two ravens. If you remember the mythology, which I'm not a mythologist, I'm a biologist, but Odin gave up an eye to gain his knowledge, and he had two ravens that were set on his shoulders that he would send off to go gather information for him.
Wow. God, how much information then can we get from, say, 36,000 crows?
Oh, well, there's a lot of interesting stuff to be learned from crows. You know, the West Nile connection has been very important. They were the things that tipped us off that there was a new disease in the country. It was a bunch of dead crows turning up where there shouldn't have been a bunch of dead crows. And so that told us that this wasn't an old disease in a new place, but rather a new disease that had never been on the continent before. And crows dying from West Nile is still one of the best ways that we can tell when there's an outbreak of West Nile occurring throughout the country. That if the crows start to die, then the people have to start paying attention.
Now, some people worry about such a large group of crows, a large group of anything, saying it's going to bring us disease. Is there a threat of disease from these large congregations of birds?
These large flocks of crows don't really represent any health hazard at all. You have to be more worried about things that are similar to you. So the more people in a big crowd, you can catch a lot of things from them, but you don't get much from crows. The droppings tend not to build up in these areas because they're occurring on the snow and they get washed away, so you don't end up getting problems with histoplasmosis or something like that that builds up in enclosed buildings where you get a lot of chickens or pigeons defecating in one spot. These roosts don't really present that kind of a risk.
So bird flu is not something to worry about. That's something I've actually heard some of the hunters mention is, gee, we've got to get rid of these birds because wouldn't it be terrible if bird flu came to Auburn?
Well, it's certainly natural that people would think about bird flu being an influence here, but so far bird flu isn't a problem in North America. And again, the people who are getting bird flu are getting it from their chickens and ducks, not from wild birds.
That also poses the idea that my understanding of bird flu was that one way it was spreading was from having a lot of dead birds in close contact, that we were eating these birds, that we were handling these birds, and that that as long as they're wild and flying away into the sky, they really are kind of safe. Would hunting thousands of them make things less safe, or is that just not something to even worry about?
Well, I don't think hunting necessarily would have much of an impact one way or the other on bird flu. Certainly if the hunters were hunting sick birds, then they wouldn't want to be in contact with them. There's still a lot we don't know about bird flu, and it's hard to know exactly how it's being spread and where it's going to turn up. Again, we do know that bird flu is most important for people who are handling domestic birds, not wild birds.
I want to ask about the particular trees and the particular area where the crows like to roost. Is there a comparable situation with another species like people or somebody else that we know better? Is this kind of like, do we think this is like the favorite coffee shop? And when we move them, is that like your favorite Dunkin' Donuts closed, or is it more like they bulldoze Town Hall? Or do we not know?
We don't really know exactly why the crows choose where they want to go to roost. In some parts of the continent, especially out in the Midwest and the Great Plains, there aren't many choices. That a lot of the cities are attractants to crows because they have big trees, and it's the only place around where there are big trees that the crows can come into. A place like Auburn has a lot of possibilities. There are a lot of trees around. There are plenty of places the crows could actually go. And exactly what it is that's attracting them into these specific places in Auburn is still not quite settled. In fact, we've been trying to think up ways to test some of these ideas. That I think the crows are attracted into town because they like the lights. There's a fair amount of ambient light there. The crows can see well into the night, so that if a great horned owl comes and tries to eat them, they can see it coming. But even more importantly, they can see where they're going if they get flushed out of a tree, so they can actually fly off and safely come back to another tree. Great horned owl is, for the crow, it is the boogeyman, right? It is this nasty thing that comes in the middle of the night and grabs you and eats you, right? So they're very concerned about great horned owls. And the owl has a very definite advantage during the nighttime. The owl can see extremely well at night, and crows probably see just about as well as we do at night. They don't have any special physiological adaptations to being able to see in low light, and they're at a definite disadvantage if there are no streetlights out there. So it appears that in many places the crows are coming into areas that are fairly well lit, places like downtown or near a mall or a hospital or on a university campus or here in this case in Auburn near the prison where things are well lit. And I think that gives them a special advantage at night, and it is a big attractant. So if you move them away from there, if you move them from one spot, they'll seek another spot. And in some places, it's not a big deal. They can find another bunch of suitable trees that are fairly well lit somewhere else. But in certain other places in the country, they don't have much choice. So they either completely leave the area or they keep coming back to those exact trees. Here in Ithaca, the smaller roost that we've been following tends to move around town. And so sometimes it's one place and then sometimes another. And in fact, within a period of a week or two, it'll move up to a mile away to a different set of trees.
Wow. Well, how come it took the crows this long to realize, hey, there's streetlights? It seems like they just kind of moved into town in the last, you know, if they, we know the crows have been roosting in this area for 100 years or more, but they only moved into the lights recently. I wonder if anything else might have changed in their life that motivated them to make the big move.
We don't really know exactly why crows started to move into urban areas in the last 20 years, 20, 30 years, but there are a couple of things that sort of play into it. One is that there was a change in the game laws that that protected crows. That there's a big law, the Federal Migratory Bird Treaty Act between the U.S., Canada, and Mexico, that essentially makes it illegal for you to go out and shoot any birds you want to. Crows weren't protected by that, and they were pretty much shot as varmints all over the place. Then in the 70s, there was a change in the law that protected crows, and so people were still hunting crows, but they had to do it within a regulated season. You couldn't just take your rifle and go out and try to shoot a crow. And I think that some of those changes in laws and changed human behavior, and the human behavior then affected the crows. That is that people stopped just taking pot shots at crows, and the crows actually experienced less aggression from the people and eventually somehow got to figure out they could get closer and closer. It's either that or they figured out somehow, again, we don't know how, but they figured out that if you get into town, you get closer to people instead of farther away from them, that you're actually safer. People don't shoot at you in town, and so this is a good place to be. And whatever it was, whether it was the overall level of people being aggressive towards crows or just some smart crows that eventually spread the behavior, it's spread all across North America.
Wow, that's fabulous. That's like a cultural revolution in crowdom.
Well, it is. It's some sort of a cultural revolution in crowdom, but exactly how it happened, we don't know. But we definitely are experiencing it. And so we know the crows are changing their behavior within your lifetime.